Are you struggling with kids fighting, yelling, and more despite listening to the podcast and reading all the books? Parenting can be so overwhelming and exhausting. You know, I see you and I have something that will help. Mindful Parenting SOS. I'm offering free live mindful parenting sessions starting Monday, May 6th. Basically, live mindful parenting lessons that you normally have to pay for. So if you struggle with getting your kids to listen, tantrums, misbehavior, and feeling the guilt of yelling at your kid, then you should definitely get your spot in Mindful Parenting SOS. I'll be there to answer your questions in person, and if you can't make it, we will have replays available. Don't wait to get your spot now. It's free. Go to mindfulmamamentor.com/SOS to register. That's mindfulmamamentor.com/SOS. I can't wait to see you there.
This time goes so fast, and I have worked with more than one set of parents, Hunter, who have come to me on the back end feeling like, I feel like we missed it and we can't get that time back. So, and we were in conflict the vast majority of the time. Mm-hmm. So to the extent that we can mitigate that and recognize like, okay, this is an anxious time for our kids. If we connect with them, we can walk with them through this time. And there's a better story to write there.
You're listening to the Mindful Mama Podcast, episode 203. Today, we're talking about parenting the new teen with Dr. John Duffy. Welcome to the Mindful Mama Podcast. Here, it's about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. At Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have. And when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm your host, Hunter Clark Fields, Mindful Mama Mentor. I help smart, thoughtful parents stay calm so they can have strong, connected relationships with their children. I've been practicing mindfulness for over 20 years. I'm the creator of the Mindful Parenting membership, and I'm the author of Raising Good Humans, a mindful guide to breaking the cycle of reactive parenting and raising kind, confident kids. Yay! Oh, hello, hello, my friend. I hope that you are well. Thank you so much for being here. In just a moment, I'm going to be sitting down with Dr. John Duffy, and he is an amazing psychologist, widely renowned author and educator. You may have seen him on the Steve Harvey Show around Chicago, and he had an amazing first book, The Available Parent, and now he has a new book called Parenting the New Teen in the Age of Anxiety, a complete guide to your child's stressed, depressed, expanded, amazing adolescence. And it is an amazing, amazing book. I can't wait for you to talk to John with me. He, you know, it's crazy because kids are growing up with almost unlimited access to social media and everything you can find on the internet, and it really changes everything. And we're also going to talk about helping kids navigate adolescence and how it starts years before adolescence. So some of my takeaways that I really want you to listen for are these: that technology really has radically changed the teen experience. It is not like it was when you were a teenager. How kids are more anxious than ever for good reasons. And we're also going to talk about what sex and relationship looks like for today's teens. And it may be really, really different than what you are expecting. This is a super powerful conversation. So I can't wait for you to dive into it. Before we dive in, I want to let you know that my Calm and Connected Challenge is happening very soon. So learn more about it at mindfulmamamentor.com/challenge. It is a 10-day free challenge that will leave you calmer and closer to your child, leading to more cooperation and more fun. And that is at mindfulmamamentor.com/challenge. And then the membership is going to be opening briefly. So if you would like to be on the wait list, learn about the special bonuses that you can get when you join, that you can get on that wait list at mindfulmamamentor.com. At mindfulparentingcourse.com. So that's mindfulparentingcourse.com. You can learn all about it. Get the life-changing course. It's really incredibly powerful. So you can get on the wait list there. And in the meantime, join me at the free training. Okay, now join me as I talk to Dr. John Duffy. John Duffy, thank you so much for coming back on the Mindful Mama podcast.
Thank you for having me, Hunter. I'm always happy to be talking to you.
I am happy to talk to you too. And I'm so happy to pick your brain and talk to you about your new book, Parenting the New Teen in the Age of Anxiety, because my daughter is turning 13 in February. So like, this is all very, very personal and very, very relevant to me. So dear listener, some of this might be just a tiny bit self-serving. I just have to admit that at the offset.
I love that.
So I love this, like the way you start this book, because you start it in this beautiful, beautiful way. And you talk about this generation of teenagers and how you admire them and how they're kind and thoughtful. They are worldly and they have this sense of justice. And then you say that our kids are in an undue degree of psychic pain.
Yeah.
Wow, that's like a heavy sentence. So can you just tell me about that? Like, what's going on there?
Yeah, there's so much going on. So if you think about what our kids are going through right now, and I don't think many of us kind of get the gestalt, the whole picture of what they're going through, but not only do they have the academic stressors that we had, but those are amped up quite a bit because there are more millennials than there were people in my generation. And so the ability to get into a certain college is more difficult than it used to be. And kids are thinking about this as early as sixth or seventh grade. Social stress is amped up as well, because not only do I have to maintain my identity with my friends in real time, but also, you know, the grid online is going constantly. So I need to keep my snap streaks up and I need to learn what VSCO is and get involved in that. And I have to get on, you know, a Facebook for people who are old school, and I have to maintain my relationships with my parents and my friends and, you know, all this other stuff. So you have academic and social stressors, and now these kids have this awareness of mental illness that we didn't necessarily have. They're aware that their friends are depressed and anxious. They wonder if they are. They talk about it all the time. They're de facto therapists for each other, and they have these really wretched methods for coping sometimes with these things. We've got all the nicotine and the marijuana and all the different delivery systems there are for these things. And oftentimes the way to cope is to isolate for a lot of kids. So it is Netflix and chilling, or just being in their room alone, doors closed. So they're alone and lonely a lot of the time. And so I find that for all of those reasons and more, kids today are far more anxious than they were, I usually say 10 years ago, Hunter, but the more I talk about it, the more I think about it, the more I think it's like 3 years ago, four Wow. years ago, maybe. You know what I mean? Like things are changing really fast. Mm-hmm. And the stress on kids is, it's just escalating super quickly.
Yeah, you talk about these brothers that were in your therapy office, and like the older brother is concerned for the younger brother who's 4 years younger than him growing up in the age he's growing up.
Yeah. And his one of his points there, which I thought was kind of fascinating, was my brother doesn't remember what it was like to be off the grid. So the kids who were born and are maybe 15 or 16 right now don't remember when an iPhone wasn't trained on them, you know, when they were going to kindergarten, you know, or having an iPad in their lap when they were in a stroller just to occupy some time. And so the idea of any kind of like grace and solitude and quiet in their minds is a very foreign notion to an awful lot of kids. They don't know how to grab onto that quiet. And so they're frenetic in their thinking virtually all the time. So I'm always looking for sanctuary in some way for kids, because they have precious little of it in their lives.
Wow. So for me, as the mindfulness advocate
yes.
that I am, this kind of scares the bejesus out of me that, you know, this incredibly distracted generation of people. And so the screen time is a big, big part, piece of this, isn't it?
It sure is. Yes. I polled some kids to ask them how much time they thought they spent on screens a day. And then I asked them to look. So, and it's not that hard to check. And they underestimated it by well under half. In other words, they would say like, oh, I think I'm on maybe for 2 or 3 hours a day. And they would look and it would be 8. That would happen on a very regular basis, that somehow they're looking at some screen or another almost a third, well, half of their waking life. Wow. And a lot of this happens at school. A lot of this happens after they're allegedly going to bed, like doors closed, lights out, and they are talking to friends online. They're just kind of looking at YouTube videos. Sometimes they're looking at pornography, if I'm being really honest about what's going on out there. So it's pretty alarming, because they don't, even when they're going to sleep, a lot of kids will look at a screen until they can't keep their eyes open. And some will tell me, because I don't want to face myself in a way. You know what I mean? Like, I'm mm-hmm. afraid of how I feel about myself. I don't think I like myself very much. I'd rather not deal with that. I'd rather watch Friends.
Mm-hmm.
I know, right?
I don't want to face myself. I think I remember feeling that way as a teenager, but you just didn't have the same level of options of distractibility that, right. that you have now. I can think there's a really a natural human desire in that everything we feel is intense and
yep.
can be scary. And it's almost like the same fear that when I ask adults and I say, you can sit by yourself quietly doing nothing and just breathing in and out for, 3 minutes to 5 minutes. And it's like, whoa, wait a second. That's a really scary thought. And it's a very legitimate fear. Like, it feels uncomfortable. It just kind of goes against our kind of natural instincts to be always kind of on the lookout and things like that.
I agree to this extent, Hunter. I often encourage the kids I work with and the parents I work with to listen to the podcast that you and I made maybe a year or two ago, mm-hmm. Just to get a feel for what mindfulness is all about and what a few minutes a day even of just finding that calm center can do for them. And a lot of people said like, wow, I never really thought about that. Even adults kind mm-hmm. of are in this space where they're like, I don't think I have time for that. And yet, when they take it, you can feel, it's palpable, the difference. You can feel how grounded they are in their world, in their lives, and in their days. And if I can get kids to, the kids I work with in particular, to take those 5 or 10 minutes of just silence and sanctuary, it makes an enormous difference in their lives.
That's so good. I'm glad to hear that, John.
Yeah.
So you're talking about I want to really like weave in like, what are the ways, what are the solutions, right? Like, there's a lot of big problems. And, when I think about teens, like your book is about the age of anxiety in the title. And, there's a lot of really legitimate things to be anxious about. Like, our government is, what is happening.
Right.
Governments around the world. The climate change is such an intense thing that we're feeling, and school shootings, like there is this real sense of danger, and we can't, many of us parents are kind of protect our kids as much as we can from the fears, as we should, like as they're young.
Sure.
And then you get to be a teenager and it's like, oh wow, this world is terrible. Like, I
yes.
can really see them kind of coming into this realization of like, yeah, there are a lot of legitimate fears to be, afraid of in this world.
Oh, absolutely. And the, almost to a teenager, the kids I work with are keenly aware of all of those. So I always think back to when I was a teenager. Was I afraid of going to school? Was I worried about the kind of what was going on in the world? And if I'm being really honest, I wasn't that worldly. I wasn't thinking about, my world was very small. It was pretty limited to, like my little world, my little suburban world. And the kids I work with today, they know what's going on. They're remarkably well informed. And so their anxiety isn't based in folly. And it's not always about like, does he or she like me? Or, you know, did I finish this homework? Sometimes it's global. Sometimes it's like, will there be a shooter at my school tomorrow? You know, like kids are worried about very pragmatic, real things that are happening in the world in a real way.
Parenting can be loud, stressful, and rough some days. And we want to be able to go to bed and take care of ourselves in a really beautiful way. And that's why I love that Cozy Earth is a sponsor of the podcast. Cozy Earth offers bedding products that will transform your sleep. The bedding is temperature regulating, which is like a huge sleep benefit, has superior softness, incredible fabric, and incredibly high quality. All the products come with a 10-year warranty. Truly, incorporating Cozy Earth products into your self-care routine can enhance your sleep quality and your overall wellness. You deserve to treat yourself to the ultimate in comfort and indulgence after all the day's craziness of parenting with Cozy Earth bedding and sleepwear. And it's a way to prioritize your self-care and sleep health. You deserve it. And here's an exclusive Mother's Day offer just for our listeners. Use the code MINDFUL35 for 35% off. That's awesome. At CozyEarth.com. That's coupon code MINDFUL35 for 35% off at CozyEarth.com. So my husband's had hair thinning issues for years, for a long time. It's not something he'd love to have. And he's done some things for it. But recently started using Nutrafol. And oh my gosh, we have actually seen quite a difference. Did you know that for women, hair thinning happens in approximately 1 in 2 women? And if you're among them, I want you to know that you're definitely not alone. It's normal, but it's not openly talked about, and going through it can feel lonely and frustrating. But you can join over 1 million people who are doing something about it with Nutrafol. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding, like my honey. Physician formulated with drug-free ingredients, Nutrafol supplements support healthy hair growth from within by targeting root causes of thinning, including stress, hormones, environment, nutrition, lifestyle, and metabolism as they evolve throughout a woman's life. And while many supplements rely solely on ingredient studies, Nutrafol clinically tests final formulations to ensure their efficacy. In a clinical study, 86% of women reported improved hair growth after taking Nutrafol's women's hair growth supplement for 6 months. With Nutrafol, building a hair growth routine is simple. Purchase online, no prescription required, free shipping, and automated deliveries to ensure you'll never miss a day. See results in 3 to 6 months. Take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month's subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code MINDFULPARENTING. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code MINDFULPARENTING. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code MINDFULPARENTING.
So definitely do it. It's really helpful. It will change your relationship with your kids for the better. It will help you communicate better. And just, I'd say communicate better as a person, as a wife, as a spouse. It's been really a positive influence in our lives. So definitely do it.
I'd say definitely do it. It's so worth it. The money really is inconsequential when you get so much benefit from being a better parent to your children and feeling like you're connecting more with them and not feeling like you're yelling all the time or you're like, why isn't things working? I would say definitely do it. It's so, so worth it. It'll change you.
No matter what age someone's child is, it's a great opportunity for personal growth and it's a great investment in someone's family. I'm very thankful I had this.
You can continue in your old habits that aren't working, or you can learn some new tools and gain some perspective to shift everything in your parenting.
Are you frustrated by parenting? Do you listen to the experts and try all the tips and strategies, but you're just not seeing the results that you want? Or are you lost as to where to start? Does it all seem so overwhelming with too much to learn? Are you yearning for a community of people who get it, who also don't want to threaten and punish to create cooperation? Hi, I'm Hunter Clark Fields, and if you answered yes to any of these questions, I want you to seriously consider the Mindful Parenting membership. You'll be joining hundreds of members who have discovered the path of mindful parenting and now have confidence and clarity in their parenting. This isn't just another parenting class. This is an opportunity to really discover your unique, lasting relationship, not only with your children, but with yourself. It will translate into lasting, connected relationships, not only with your children, but your partner too. Let me change your life. Go to mindfulparentingcourse.com to add your name to the waitlist, so you will be the first to be notified when I open the membership for enrollment. I look forward to seeing you on the inside. mindfulparentingcourse.com. So their fears are totally real. But so one of the things they're using all this screen time, using all this stuff to distract from these really kind of real fears and things like that. To kind of jump back to like the screen time and kind of look into some of the solutions. I'm really sort of pleased in some ways it's the hardest thing. In some ways it's the easiest thing that you talk about that we need to better regulate our own screen time first.
Yes.
As a family.
Right. So I noticed that in your new book, you talk about modeling, quite a bit. And that's one thing I encourage parents to do too, because oftentimes I will have parents talking to their kids about modulating their screen time in a session where a therapy session where the parent will take out their phone or an iPad and look at their own messages, And so there, you can feel the hypocrisy in this, and so I often work with parents about really attend to your own behavior and what you're modeling for your kids. Is there a TV on in your home, constantly? That's a screen too. And we forget, but if you are running the news all the time, that's probably telling your child well, I may as well look at this other screen as well. And maybe this one is two. And sometimes kids have three screens going all at once. So I think the more that we modulate and regulate our own screen time and our own emotions in a lot of ways, I think we're doing such better jobs as parents. And our kids follow our lead, So parents will tell me, boy, if I scale back, even if I don't say anything, almost organically, the whole house seems to scale back and work in a far more effective way. And people are willing to put the phone in the kitchen to charge overnight instead of having it right at the bedside. And it's some of these little gestures that feel like, wow, that can't be that significant, but that might buy you another hour and a half or 2 hours of sleep in a given night. Those little gestures tend to be very, very significant in the lives of your kids and tend to manage anxiety the next day today, which is really important.
So with these little gestures and regulating ourselves, would you then recommend that also like parents, maybe if they have teens now, or maybe they have kids who are going to be teens in a couple of years or whatever, would you recommend setting some boundaries up ahead of time? So I remember, I heard about plug your phone in downstairs a long time ago.
Right.
From some dear friends of ours, Kathy and Todd Adams. And I was like, yes, that's what I should do. And then I was using my phone as my alarm clock on the opposite side of my room for a long time. And my daughter called me out and she said, you have to plug it in downstairs, because we can't use the iPad in our room. So, so in our house, we have certain boundaries around the screen time. And actually we got my adolescent daughter, she got really annoyed at us at being so strict about our, we have like half an hour screen time on weeknights and we have a screen free Sunday. So we have some boundaries on them and she got really annoyed with us. But what would you, but I'm feeling like, listen to you, I'm feeling like, okay, I'm fine with those boundaries. I'm feeling good about that. What would you recommend? What are some of the boundaries that maybe parents of kids who are going to be teens later or teens now, what would you recommend instituting?
Right. It's a great question. So you absolutely want to do what you're doing. You want to establish really good habits early on. And you cannot take the screen away. Your child will be on a screen and should sometimes. You know, they're remarkable devices for communicating and learning. And there's a lot of good that happens there, that kids make plans on their screen. So if you took it away altogether, you'd be taking away a part of their social life and a part of their kind of touchstone to pop culture. And so I'm not mm-hmm. in favor of that. But mm-hmm. being able to kind of self-modulate and regulate all that, you want to teach those skills really early on. So I love the idea of saying, you know, half an hour screen time a night. I would add to that after your homework is done, after your chores are done, and making that the carrot at the end of the night, as opposed to like, okay, I'll use my half an hour as soon as I get home from school, but then I'll be asking for another half an hour, you know, at 8 o'clock or sometime down the road.
It's a strong carrot.
It's a strong carrot. It's so potent, right? And I also, just to make it more complicated, I don't want it to be the last thing a child does. I always like something else before we go to bed, talking, reading, something that it really feels like winding down, because we have to remember how stimulating that screen is, you know, and it doesn't suggest sleep. It suggests like, let's do more of this. I like the idea of regulating it. A screen-free Sunday is a great idea if you can do it. On the whole, I encourage parents to create lives for their kids or co-create lives for their kids where screens are as much as possible in the margins, so that you're not debating them every single day. Because I work with families where the vast majority of the therapy hour is spent on this lecture about like, boy, more than a couple hours on screens and you're going to be depressed. You're going to be anxious. You might have attention problems. You could even be suicidal. And these tend to fall pretty flat, these lectures. But if we just establish really good habits and we say, you know, like, well, okay, you can earn screen time by half an hour. And I like half hour bites, because then there's this regulation in that I put it down. And if I put it down, it's not the end of the world. I'm not missing out on anything terrible. And if it's an occasional touchstone, that's okay. I don't have to stare at it all the time in order to feel connected.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're saying, and this is something you talk about in the rest of the book, that and I think this is really interesting. You're saying like, build this life. You just said build this life that has a lot of things going on besides screen. Right. And sure. I think this is really interesting, because I've really sort of seen that, like, for our little kids, like, they need a lot of like unstructured time. They need a lot of time to daydream and play and to make their own games up, and they need a very unscheduled lives. Right. And in some ways, and you have talked about, as you've talked about this book, that actually teens need some more scheduling. They need some like activities, and they also, you talk about, they need exercise in here. No, this is something I almost wouldn't have thought about. Like, talk to us a little bit about how teens are not exercising so much and the activities.
Well, one thing about working with teens is if you sit down with them, you learn an awful lot really, really quickly. And they'll kind of walk you through what the problems are and even what the solutions are. And so the idea of pushing screen time to the margins, I've worked with a number of kids who are athletes. And you get this feeling that when I'm out on a field or I am on the track or I'm in a pool or I'm moving in some way, I'm off the grid. So I'm off the grid and I'm kind of curating my mind and body and spirit in a completely different way than I would in any other setting. So exercise became like such a cornerstone of my message. And in speaking since the book came out, I've had some parents say, well, mine isn't really an athlete, you know, he or she is clumsy or heavy and I encourage parents not to carry that script around, because mm-hmm. any kid can move and sweat and play and jump and run. And, you know, even if they're not on the varsity team of the high school, they can go to Orange Theory. They can go to yoga. You know, I worked with a girl this week, and it was lovely, Hunter. She's 17. And she went to yoga. She's in the past talked about how much she hates her body, and she feels like it's her enemy. One yoga session, and she said, I realized how my body's my friend, and what it can do is amazing. And she said, and it was horrible. It was really difficult to do, and it was so hard to hold these poses. But I realized I'm really strong, and I'm really capable of doing this, and I can get better at this. And so I'm going to keep doing it. And she said, and I was this close to never, ever doing that and just thinking, you know what? I'm just that person who's never physical in any way. And I think that's a terrible message to carry, to disregard the vessel you are in, instead of taking care of it and recognizing how powerful it is and how it can help you with your emotional regulation as well. Because, when we move and we sweat, we feel better and mm-hmm. we're off the grid. That's a big piece of it for me right now is we can't be looking at a screen when we're doing yoga or in a pool, and I just love the sanctuary of that.
That's so funny, John, because my youngest daughter, who's 9 and she's about to turn 10, she hasn't been able to do this, but she is so wants to be able to go walk on a treadmill for 2 hours and watch TV the whole time. Like, because the YMCA treadmills have Netflix on them and she can watch Stacey Plays on YouTube.
Yeah, oh my God, that's amazing.
This is like her dream right now. And I'm just like, oh no.
Oh, that is, it's amazing, right? I would say that there's a lot of these, companies that are developing treadmills and the Peloton bikes that do not work in my favor here. Although I will say, some of the exercise regimens that show up on these little screens, I think are really cool. And I don't know if that has the same kind of detrimental kind of screen element mm-hmm. as, staring at Snapchat or something might.
I don't really understand Snapchat. Can you tell me what it is?
Yes.
It's like the one where do things disappear quickly? Is that so you yes. have to kind of be engaged?
Yes. I love that you asked because at the beginning of some talks I've given in the not too distant past, I would ask a parent just to demonstrate how little we know about our kids' worlds, to come up and describe for us all how Snapchat works. And it's so fun and funny to hear how little we understand about how this works. So Snapchat, it seems like a really fun idea. Like it's way for kids, it's kind of taking texting to the next level. You can take a group and send them a meme or even a little video, and it can be a little longer than something you'd send in a text. The thing that is maddening to so many parents is even if they're checking their child's phone every night, the snaps disappear, and there are some apps that you can use to pull them back in, but they're exceptionally complicated. So that's what Snapchat is. That's the social media that teenagers are using right now the most. Although they are all aware that the next Snapchat is in the hopper, waiting for them out there and ready to go, and they don't know what that looks like, So. They're always interested in like, well, what's the next social media? What's the next video game? What's the next thing, that's coming along for me?
Oh my gosh. So it disappears. So then you have to check it or else you're going to be out of the loop. Oy, yeah. Yay. This is so annoying to me.
let me make it more annoying just for a second, Hunter. So, I don't know if the developers of Snapchat had this in mind, but kids develop snap streaks. So if I are Snapchat friends and we snap every day back and forth, if you took your daughter's phone away for a day, she would lose the streak. So if she had a streak of 400 days, it would feel socially devastating to kids. And it often does. So the threat of taking a phone away is big for parents because a lot of kids will say, well, can I have it for 5 minutes just so I can just get my snap streaks and keep them going? That is a big thing for kids. And it might feel, when I first heard about this, I will admit it felt like just ridiculous to me. I was kind of like, I was working with this boy and I said, are you kidding? Does this really matter to you? And he said, yeah. And he pointed out, stupid things mattered to you when you were my age. Like, fair enough. That's true.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. If someone told me I couldn't pass notes in high school.
Exactly.
In some ways, it's kind of like the same thing.
It is.
It is beautiful here in Delaware. All the trees are blooming and all the flowers are blooming. It is gorgeous, but that means that people in my family and myself are suffering from some allergy symptoms. So I am thrilled to let you know about Astepro. You may not know about it. It's brand new. It's a first of its kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, but I swear, like, it started working so quickly. I used it right before I went for a run, and it worked so quickly. Astepro delivers full prescription strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief. So it could be like from cats as well, from nasal congestion, runny nose, itchy nose, and sneezing. I love that it goes right in my nose. So it's not like going in all the different parts of my body. It is steroid free. It is working so, so fast. Get fast acting nasal allergy relief with Astepro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can Astepro and go today. That's Astepro allergy.com. Astepro and go. Use as directed for relief from nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itching due to allergies. I want to tell you about a great podcast that you should check out, especially if you ever deal with any school system, which you probably do. It's called Understood Explains. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Ortubé, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs. And this season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP and busts common myths about special education. So I checked out the episode on the difference between IEPs and 504 plans because my daughter Maggie uses a 504 plan, and it was really, really helpful. It went over all the differences, which one's better, how to get them, different myths and what your rights are, all kinds of different things that you should understand if your child may need extra help in education through an IEP or a 504 plan. The tone is super helpful, friendly, and smart. I highly recommend you check it out. To listen to Understood Explains, just search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's it. Understood Explains.
All right. So we're like sort of jumping around a little bit here, but I think this is so fascinating. So ideally we want to kind of be setting some of these boundaries and these habits early so that we can have them kind of going into adolescents. They want to have more activities that are, you know, push screen time to the margins, more activities that are more organized when you're in adolescence. And one thing you talk about that you've talked about with me before that I think is so important, but like all of these things are kind of like, these are big parental asks, right? Like we're kind of, like you say in the book, pulling the parent card quite a bit to like make some of these boundaries. And you talk about also the emotional bank account to just fund this.
yes, right.
So yes. Tell us about this part, because this is sort of the opposite side of like dealing with all the problems is like the connection.
Right. Okay. So if I can, let me start with a brief story. I worked with a boy a couple of years ago, and he was talking to his father, and he said, "When I became a teenager, when I got into high school, you changed. So you're always telling me I've changed, but you actually changed. You became like the police. Instead of, so we used to have
so much." Oh my God, I just have to interrupt here because that's like my father. Like when I was a kid, he was like, question things, be rebellious and do all these things. And then like when I became an adolescent, he was like, you will do it as I say because I say it. And I was like, who are you?
Where did you come from, man?
Sorry, please continue your story. No, I can relate enormously.
I love that. Thank you. So you know what I'm talking about. And his dad kind of recognized, okay, that probably is true. But, dad pointed out accurately, but I'm worried that things are, you know, I want things to work out for you. I want you to get into a really good college. I want you to have a really good job one day. And I think we connect these things in ways that don't necessarily move the needle forward in a way that we want them to. I don't think we need to lecture our kids about any of these things. They know where we stand, that they've known us their entire lives. So I think I always come back to these three elements of parenting: fear and judgment and ego. And they are the most difficult things to move to the side and parent kind of freely. But if we can do that sometimes, you know, we're not going to be able to do that all the time because we have legitimate parental fears. Our egos are sometimes out there, and sometimes we feel judgmental of our kids, of ourselves, of other kids. I don't expect anybody to be perfect, but if we can do this a lot of the time and then just connect with our kids, just enjoy them, just get to understand who they are, what their lives are about, what's weird about them that doesn't show up on the report card, but is really amazing and wonderful. Well, you know, if they're sarcastic or if they can do graffiti or, you know, even if you can't stand it, what's interesting about them, and curate that and celebrate that a little bit. Then the emotional bank account has this balance in the black. And when you need to have their attention and talk to them about screen time or about drugs or about sex, you are so far more likely to have their attention and have your words heeded than you would be if you were just the police. If you're just the police, then all you are white noise, you know, and your kid kind of feels like they check out. And I see it. I watch it. I've watched it this week, and I'm picturing a particular family where I've had to ask the kid, you know, so when did mom and dad lose you? He's like, oh, right away. I knew where we were going, and I just stopped listening.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh,
it happens
okay.
In families a lot.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You can see how it happens. And in each stage, there's sort of these different levels of like, okay, now I have to connect with this new person, right? Because we're always changing. And it's true. Yeah. You know, we're always a new person, and as our kids are. So that's that sort of coming back to that. Now, you mentioned drugs and sex. Oh my gosh, we haven't even gotten into that. What I've heard is that So my personal experience of being an adolescent is that I was like rebelling full on, and you know, all the lots of like those bad stuff pretty right. Early, right? Like, and it's interesting now that I look at my kids, and I've kind of noticed they seem in some ways like they're not as interested in some of these. I mean, at least my kids aren't. Like they're not interested in, you know, the adolescent's not interested in dating or any boys, nothing like that. I've heard kind of a rumor on the street, so to speak, that kids are like kind of sexually just not experimenting as young as maybe we used to, like in the 90s or whatever.
No, that's definitely true. And that's good news and bad news, right? Mm-hmm. I think a lot of parents listening to us right now are thinking like, oh, good. we don't have to worry about that. We don't have to think about that or talk about that. No, I think there's something healthy about that, in that kids are, instead of dating at really young ages, not that it never happens, but it doesn't happen as often as it used to. Kids tend to hang around in groups. And one thing I really love about that is they're often co-ed groups, so that boys and girls are friends with each other, you know, like without any of that kind of sexual agenda or that, you know, hookup agenda. The downside of it is, I think the kids are sometimes a little more disconnected than we used to be. In that I work with an awful lot of kids who on a given Friday or Saturday night, high school, sophomores, juniors, seniors, will choose to stay home as opposed to being out and socializing. I'll stay home, I'll play video games, I'll watch Netflix, I'll, you know, look at Snapchat a little bit. And so there's this loneliness and isolation on the other side of that equation that worries me a little bit, because I see this more in the last year or so than I've ever seen before. And maybe it's that there's enough out there to kind of stimulate our kids that, you know, staying home isn't awful, but also they're not kind of challenging themselves to connect with other kids as much as I would like them to. And there's this loneliness factor that is kind of like this depressive drag on their psyche that I worry is escalating.
I could see that. Like in the 90s, if you were home on a Friday night, like you're watching your parents watch PBS, and yes. It's like there's like only one phone on the wall and no one is calling because like right. No one else is there. It's just really, really boring. So the social risk of connecting with others was worth it because the alternative was really not so fun. But now you have the whole world at your fingertips. So
yes.
That when you weigh that against the social risk of connecting and asking and, you know, all of that stuff, then I guess do you have any ideas about what can we do about that? How we can encourage?
Well, I think,
and kids need to take risks, right? They need to take social risks. They need to connect with people. They need to go have their own lives as teenagers when we're around to then be there for them when things go sideways.
Yeah, they need to be able to have that first conversation and get through that awkwardness, whatever that is, and get used to the occasional no if they're asking somebody out or, all that stuff. Those are important social elements that a lot of kids are missing. So what I find works best is not to try to figure it out on the back end and say, go up to somebody in math class and say hello and press your kids to do something that feels really pretty inorganic to them. I would encourage parents as early as possible to get your kids involved in something, that meets on a regular basis. And that doesn't, you and I talked about sports. It doesn't have to be a school-related sport. It can be a play. It can be the band. It can be any number of activities, student council, something where they organically are talking to peers outside of class. And, I noticed that when kids do stuff like this, the ability to talk to other people in a casual way is something they develop kind of organically. And the ability to kind of expand their social circle becomes pretty easy for them because it's like, well, I'm in band with this kid. We're not good friends, but he's got this friend and we hang out a lot together, and you end up meeting people in this kind of organic way. And I think most of us did this when we were in high school. When I think about how my best friendships developed, they were tertiary. They weren't primary initially. They were like, oh, there's this kid who hangs out with a friend of mine. And, I guess I really like that kid. And, he was in my wedding, So, I want kids to do more of that where they're engaged far more frequently than they are now. Because one statistic that I don't see, but it should be out there somewhere, is how far less kids are signing up for the thing. You know what I mean? Whether it be a sport or a group or a club or a play, in the schools right around me, we see like, oh, the fall play, we're not going to do that anymore. We've lost interest. And, some schools have cut out like cross country and gymnastics and it isn't just for funding. A lot of it is for lack of interest. And, and I think we, as parents, part of our gig ought to be encouraging our kids, and playing the parent card, even in this regard, you gotta do something. You can get a job, you can join a club, you can join a sport, but you're gonna do something because I want you out there and I want you engaged. And you're just gonna have to trust me on this. This you have to do.
Yeah. I'm thrilled. My daughter just got involved with Scouts. She's like now it's like perfect for her. She's working up the ranks of the Scouts. She's so excited. Listener,
I like that match too. The idea of matching your kid up to the right thing, right? Scouts sounds like the right thing for your daughter. Absolutely.
It's so good for her. So we're going to, dear listener, you're going to just have to buy John's book. And if you're going to want to hear his advice about drugs and things like that, but it's really powerful and very, I've had all kind of bookmarked and things, and I would highly recommend it. So for parents overall, the sort of picture, kind of what I'm hearing is get to know your kids, get connected. Any other sort of final words of advice as we close out here?
Enjoy your kids. This time, by the time your kids are approaching the teenagers or teenage years or through them, this time goes so fast. And I have worked with more than one set of parents, Hunter, who have come to me on the back end feeling like, I feel like we missed it and we can't get that time back. So, and we were in conflict the vast majority of the time. Mm-hmm. So to the extent that we can mitigate that and recognize like, okay, this is an anxious time for our kids. If we connect with them, we can walk with them through this time instead of kind of like arguing and being in separate spaces and never really gaining that connection, that foothold for a lifetime. There's a better story to write there. And that's what I'm trying to encourage in the book.
That's so beautiful. I'm so excited about it. John, thank you so much for coming back on the Mindful Mama podcast, one of just a few tiny roster of returning guests. And
I am honored.
I really appreciate your wisdom, and you're in there with the teenagers every day, and you have got some insight. And I'm so glad that you chose to take that insight and make it into a new book. I am really grateful. So thank you.
You're the best, Hunter. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. I appreciate it so much. It's amazing, right? I imagine you learned as many things as I did. Oh my goodness, all the anxieties and teens and things like that. Oh, do you have any kids who are going into adolescence? If so, I'd love to chat with you. Let's start the conversation, you know, over on Facebook or Instagram at mindfulmamamentor.com. Before I let you go, important to let you know that right now, if you're listening to this right when it comes out, we are doing the Calm and Connected Challenge. You probably still have time to drop in, and that's at mindfulmamamentor.com/challenge. And the Mindful Parenting course is going to be open briefly. So get on the waitlist if it's in the future, or go there now, mindfulparentingcourse.com. Be part of the tribe. Be part of this generation of parents who are changing generational patterns. It is so, so powerful. And we are opening up, we are starting our first class of the Mindful Parenting Teacher Training, which is so cool. So if you are interested in learning more about teaching mindful parenting in your local community, and becoming a certified mindful parenting teacher, please reach out to me, hunter@mindfulmamamentor.com. So it's lots of stuff is happening. I hope I will see you and hear from you. Love your notes. I love getting tagged in your shares on Instagram. So fun. This is a powerful episode. I can't wait to hear what you think. And I will be back with you next week talking about your child's developmental stages with Karen Culp. So be there or be square. I will see you there. I'm wishing you a beautiful week. I'm wishing you peace. I'm wishing you joy. I'm wishing you some calm and lots of sleep. That's always good. All right. Have a wonderful, wonderful week, my friend. Namaste.
Are you overwhelmed by the things that get in the way of you doing what you want to do? Are you looking for ways to simplify life to better align with your values? Do you want to create space in your schedule so you have room for more of the good stuff? Play, joy, relationships, gratitude, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I invite you to check out Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you'll come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Check out Edit Your Life wherever you enjoy your podcasts.